February 4, 2006. Episode number 14. Interview with Dana Cook and Barry Bryant, a.k.a. Tumbloke.
This is a Slaga podcast.
Warning! Warning! Does not compute.
What is a podcast? Anyway, we were just talking about that.
You
coming
guys
over.
Are newbies, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On-demand radio, although it's basically just like, you know, an MP3 files of music files.
Right.
These end up becoming MP3 files on the internet, which you can download and listen to on an MP3 player or burn to a CD, listen to the car. Podcasts are just anybody who has a microphone and an audio editing tool and knows how to publish it to the internet. And it kind of started out grassroots, you know, people like me in their living room or in their basement with they have these things called podcatchers.
Podcatchers. Sounds like some sort of invasion of the body
snatcher. Is there radio talk shows on there?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah? Are they all free or is some...
Most of them are. On one end of the spectrum, there's a guy whose podcast all he does is count numbers.
He does what?
Counts numbers. On this episode, I'm going to count from 100 to 200. 100.
It's a former patient of mine.
1 or 2. You know, everybody finds their little niche. I'm not a radio DJ type, but I can ask questions and then edit all the bad stuff out and publish something about geocaching. Because there's maybe 1 or 2 people who were doing it prior to when I got started. So that's kind of where it started, and it's just kind of grew from there. You try something and it works, or you try something that doesn't work, and just try to improve it all the time.
Yeah.
It's like we live in a cave.
Half of our neighbors all have a satellite.
Yeah, I'm pretty frustrated just with ISDN. I mean, we're still paying a lot of money. It's not technically broadband.
No.
So
128? It's a pure 128.
It's up and down as far as the phone company is concerned. Once you hit your ISP, what they allow to use as far as bandwidth is limited.
Now, the people you know that have satellite, how has their experience been? Have you asked?
Well, you know, it's always a comparison to their business lines. Like, well, it's nothing like what I have at work.
Yeah.
Of course not, because they're on, you know, Omega T1 up there.
Do they have problems? I know with the satellite TV, you have problems with rain fade occasionally or weather, so they have those types of problems.
Yeah, same thing will affect it, yeah. You either got to pay a lot up front, or commit to a long-term contract for 3 years. And my one neighbor just paid $1,200 up front and only has a one-year contract.
Oh, before I forget, I always get a thumbnail picture of the people that I...
Oh, that's right. I want to comb my hair.
It's only 60 by 60 pixels, so the details won't show up. Give me some sugar. Before we get started, if you guys want to jot down notes, or as we're talking, if you want to jot down notes, so something you might think of. We could pause at any time, and I do lots of editing.
Yeah, good.
We kind of made 15-minute cheat sheet of just cache names, because I didn't want to be like, remember that cache, and that cache over here, because I don't ever remember the name.
I also have your profile and all the pages from your profile on GC.com printed out. I usually use that, but if you... want to use it to jog your memory.
All three of them?
All three of them.
None of them are up to date anymore.
You had
there's a little bit on each one.
Yeah.
P.S. Any rumors about my being one with nature cannot be verified. At least I hope they can.
They absolutely can.
So can yours.
We're not going to talk about that.
Are you sure you want to go there?
But I would like to find out about how the Baramus came about, how Soldier of Fortune, and then eventually the Tumble Oak.
Sure.
How about that?
I'm going to go in the other room so you guys can
hear them. Yeah, she doesn't hang around. She's like to be in the audience.
Well, it just seemed like, you know, the first few ones I wasn't around at all. It just seemed like that was the way to go.
Better with a studio audience, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
Or some fake canned laughter.
I got some gong. So.
Yeah, that would be good. How sensitive is that microphone?
Good question. I still need to adjust it.
Obviously, I'm low budget here. Otherwise, I'd have a wireless mic for all of us, which might be someday.
The Tick Fringe, that was where we went on the wheelchair?
Yes.
We went there. Yeah, well, us three were there. That's right. With Elaine.
And the dog.
Yeah, I went back with her when I was in Chairbound. She pushed me there.
Really?
Yeah.
Up that hill?
No, we didn't go all the way to the cache. Oh. I stopped at that lower parking lot where they were where the campground was.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, she didn't go all the way up that hill.
Like, wow.
I wouldn't trust her going one up there. He pushed me up the edge. There was a handicap trail, the paved trail from a parking lot all the way down to the St. Francis River, and there was a little deck, a lookout deck. There was some kind of a cache there where you trade a key trade.
Yeah, keychain exchange.
Keychain exchange. There you go.
Yeah, I remember that.
She pushed me all the way down there, too. Oh. Yeah.
He gained 5 pounds, like, every 50 feet,
I swear. I have both dogs. One of them on a leash, he can.
How long were you in a wheelchair?
I was six.
After the knee operation?
Yeah, 6 weeks, no weight bearing.
For Bruce's 2000, was that afterwards? Because that point you were on crutches.
Right.
I could have been on crutches then too, but I wasn't going to take my crutches all the way down like that.
Okay.
My armpits would be too sore by then.
Are you ready?
We're ready.
Here we go. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, podcast number 14. And I have another couple in front of me. We're, as usual, in my living room. I have Barry Bryant and Dana Cook, formerly known as Baramus and Soldiers of Fortune, now known as Tumbleoak. And I'll ask you about that later.
Definitely native St. Louis and been here all my life. Currently reside out in rural Pacific. Been geocaching since 2001.
I don't remember the first time we met, but I knew there was someone nearby who was putting caches out.
I remember seeing your logs and you were setting out those pennies, was it? Pennies or nickels, and I always wanted to get one of those.
Steel, 1943 steel pennies.
The steel pennies, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So we started exchanging emails. That's back when we each had like 30 or 40 finds, way back in the early days.
What do you do for a living now?
I do lots of things, mostly to do with the home improvement contractor. I'm a realtor and investments in real estate. I was laid off right after 9/11. I spent 20 years in the telecom and computer industry.
Okay.
So this is totally different. I work for myself now, and it's fun. I like it. All my family's still here in St. Louis. Grew up in Afton. Moved out here to Pacific about 8 years ago.
And built your own house.
Yes.
And a lovely house it is.
Yes, we actually had the one of the fall picnics out there, it was.
Yeah.
The second picnic.
They put out some temporary caches behind your place, which was in the same area as Labarque Creek.
That is correct.
Where you have three caches now known as the Labarque Trilogy.
Yeah. Walkabout Trilogy.
Walkabout, yeah.
Right. That's now the Labarque Conservation Area.
I did that with some slog of people a few months ago, and we stood on the cliff and we saw Barry's house and we waved.
A lot of people do that, yes.
Yeah, and so close, but yet so far, because you've physically are not far from the preserves, but to get there by road, it takes quite a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A few hundred feet as the crow flies, but about a 10 to 15 minute drive to get around there.
Barry, how about you, Dana? Where are you from, and how did you get here?
That could be a long story. Born in Kentucky, grew up in New Orleans, came to St. Louis in December 1990. And the reason I ended up here, my father got transferred up here, and I was still in college, which is kind of funny because I've been in college most of my life. Moved up here when I ran out of money. I stayed behind in New Orleans. They moved up here. College kid, ran out of money, came up here and finished school. And have been here on and off ever since. I spent a year in Arizona just because. Wanted to always go to the desert and be there. And
that's a good enough excuse.
Yeah, so I ran away to Arizona for a year. And missed family, and for this reason, for that reason, ended up coming back to St. Louis, which I've found out from many people who've lived here for a long time, that tends to happen. Mm. People go away, they come back.
But you wouldn't mind. You did like Arizona, so you wouldn't mind going back there.
Oh, I certainly wouldn't mind going back there. As a matter of fact, we've been back twice since we met. I love it. I love the desert. Part of my heart and soul is out there.
I lived in Tucson, but that was in first grade, and I don't remember a whole lot. Except I had a lot of bloody noses because the air was so dry.
It is very dry.
So, yeah. But it might be good for my asthma. So I get rid of my asthma and I get a bloody nose. Which one do you want to pick? One or the other?
Bloody nose is probably cheaper in the long run. I actually didn't really know humidity until I moved away and came back. Growing up in New Orleans, it's humid all the time. I came up here, I thought I was going to get a break, only to find out that, no.
Yeah.
No break in the humidity here.
Right.
And like I said, I didn't really recognize it until I came back from Arizona. And I came back in June, and it was like, oh, my God, when did it get this hot and gross?
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of New Orleans, did you have any relatives in New Orleans that were affected by the hurricane?
Yeah, actually, I did. They all got out. Nobody got hurt. Some cousins stayed at my grandparents' for a while. They went back and found out that a lot of houses in their neighborhood were destroyed, but they were actually okay. Another cousin, I found out, lost everything. Mm. And it took a while to find an aunt who lived really back near the Gulf. She was gone for a while, but we found her, and everybody's okay. My mom and dad have a lot down there and are still expecting to move back as soon as my dad retires. They can't wait to get back.
Okay.
Hurricane Sudan.
Say a little bit about the annual crawfish boil.
Crawfish boil. Pounds of crawfish, but something like 100 pounds. The first year, 200 pounds maybe the first year, and 50 people. And the next year, it'd be 300 pounds and 100 people. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And this is when they lived down in Foley, and they had a lot of property out there, too. They moved back to New Orleans for a while, but as soon as they got back up here, the very first year, they started it all over again. And these parties just got to be huge. There's a band every year, nearly 1,000 pounds of crawfish.
That's a lot of red bugs.
Yeah, it is a lot of red bugs. That's a lot of Yankees eating a lot of red bugs, which was really kind of funny how people up here really took to that.
And all the neighbors... And our neighbors' friends and friends of friends.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When we had it, when we had
strangers.
When we had it in Foley, there was, the property was laid out a little bit differently, and there were a couple of ponds, on the property, and people would come over and camp. And the party was on Saturday, and on Sunday night, there would still be people mulling around, and people we didn't know who were camping on our property. It's like, you need breakfast? And what? It's really kind of funny. It settled down from that when they left and came back. It wasn't quite as wild as those days.
But this year was the last year.
My dad, this was the 10th year, and he has a thing about doing things for 10 years, and that's it. He rode in the Endymion Parade for 10 years for Mardi Gras in New Orleans. It's a really big crew, a really big deal, and he did that for 10 years, and his 10th year he was done.
Wow.
On to something else.
Barry, you said you started around 2000, so that's...
I think it was 2001. It was the same year you did. Same year you started.
Right.
And it was in late fall, late summer, early fall.
2001.
So I remember because the chiggers were still out and the ticks. Uh-huh. And, boy, I hadn't had that many bites since I was a kid down in the lake.
Thank you, geocaching.
Woo! The first cache I did was over in Route 66 State Park. And, of course, we just followed the arrow straight line from the parking lot, not knowing to stay on the trail, because that's where the cache ended up being anyway. And, yeah, we were walking through four-foot-tall grass. And, well, we came back next day, had hundreds of chigger bites.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it ghost?
I don't remember. Cache? It was a Glen's cache.
It was a ghost.
Okay.
I got chiggers the same place. The first time I ever had the worst set of chiggers. But I had no idea, about spraying around the ankles. And
if you catch in Missouri, you will get chiggers. Yes.
But how do you decide on your geocaching name?
My name, I was on the website, and it asked you to log in. I was like, well, what should I use here? Well, somebody used to call me Baramus years ago. Never really had a nickname, but that was as close as I ever had to one. So it fit. I'll stick that in there.
So it was a spur of the moment.
Most definitely, yes.
And, of course, whatever you put in there, you get get stuck with for years.
Yes, we do.
Branded as Baramus.
And how do you feel about people actually saying as Baramus?
Oh, that's fine. Actually, if you try to sound it out, you would think it is Baramus with the two R's in there.
And I noticed from your profile that you've had one travel bug.
Yes, I have.
What's the name of that one?
He is in my drawer right now, actually.
What was his name?
That's Baramus. But it's spelled with an E.
Right. As in teddy bear.
And the bug, the travel bug, is actually a tiny little, yeah, bear.
Did he actually get stolen once, or did it get...
Somebody took him and he disappeared and
reinstated.
I think, yeah, the original's gone, but I was able to get the copy going. I still had him. He's at home. Haven't used him for a long time.
So you really didn't get into at least putting travel bugs out.
I still have an extra three tags, I think, at home, unused. Well, two, because I gave you one.
That's right. The one travel bug that I put out,
right,
the tags from you.
That's right. That was right. It was a gift.
So how do you feel about travel bugs these days? When you go caching, you see them in the cache, do you just push them aside, or do you look at them and actually see whether you can...
I do. I still look at them and generally take them if I can help them or get them closer or just a lateral move. Yeah, it's still fun.
Okay.
Until you come home from vacation and you have a suitcase full of them, and you're like, now, what was this one supposed to do? Where is it going to go? And then you end up losing one or two because it's in a different bag in the back of your luggage.
Find it a month later.
Yes.
Yeah, we've had that happen.
Yeah. we've had to report one missing before, and then like 6 months later we found it back in another piece of luggage in a hidden pocket. There it is.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy getting them, yes.
Yeah.
When we're on vacation, it's fun to get them and bring them back. And we've brought many back from Hawaii.
All right, Dana, how about you? Soldiers of Fortune.
Not quite as dramatic as it sounds. Actually, it was kind of a real impulsive thing, too, in that I started geocaching because I like to hike. I was not into computers or GPSs or technology or anything. I wanted to go for a hike. And when I found out about it, I thought that would be just a really neat thing to add to a hike. And... you know, found out about it being a box in the woods and it had trinkets in it, so that's kind of like a fortune in Soldier's Hike. So it was kind of like a hike to the fortune, Soldiers of Fortune. When I came back here, talking to people, when they've heard that they found out about Soldiers of Fortunes, I think they thought that it was some sort of, I don't know, Panamanian freedom fighter.
Power to the people!
Exactly. So I think there was a lot of kind of misunderstanding of what it really meant, just hiking to a box of trinkets. That's all it means, really. And it being plural soldiers, because it was me and my dog, because that was my team, or whoever was with me kind of fell under that, too.
When did you get started with GPS?
January 2002.
And where were you caching at that point? Were you
Tucson.
Here to say,
no, okay, I was in Tucson.
Okay.
Yeah, my first cache was in Sabino Canyon in Tucson. One of the prettiest places out there.
Mm-hmm.
It was the perfect first cache to find. And I remember very much what that was like. You said you went straight line. Caching in Arizona is great because there's no trace. I mean, you get
you
perfect
get good reception, right?
And you get within 7 to 10 feet, but it's that what they call that drunken bee dance. You kind of step 3 steps this way and then 4 steps that way and then turn around and go this. And that's kind of, I remember very much walking around it like that because I think I was expecting it to zero out at the box.
Right, right.
So yeah, it took a while to get used to looking for those piles of rocks there.
You bought a GPS receiver just so you can go geocaching?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no use.
I can say, oh, there's another use for it?
Yeah, really. I did find out another thing about caching in the desert is it doesn't take long. You can walk out 50 yards in the desert, turn around, and be completely lost.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's not trees and it's not dense, just the way the vegetation is, it's very easy to get lost. And then I've had some scares out in the desert.
But you have these smaller rolling hills where your car would hide behind. You can't see it.
Right.
The whole highway could be there and you can't see it. But
right.
It's only a 10-foot hill.
I found out that my car is, in fact, not four-wheel drive by caching in the desert. I've taken it places it should never have been. And it's still carrying some scars and injuries.
And you still have it?
Yeah, I still have it. Yeah.
And wanted to park closer.
Yes.
That was always a joke when you and I were caching.
Oh, yeah.
Like, anytime we got close to the cache, we would see a road or trail. And
oh, we could have gone
closer.
I would have driven here if I was driving.
Yeah. Oh, I got the city car that you can't take places.
What was the name of that road?
Zombie
Road, yes.
You could drive down that.
Sure.
Maybe that one big gully washout, but, you know.
Your car would have made it if you were driving.
I can't just jump from your geocaching name to your combination name until we find out somewhere in the middle there's something happened.
How the twain converged?
Yeah, so I guess it was a spring or a fall picnic. At
fall picnic. Oh, two.
Big card.
Right.
And Barry shows up. Dana shows up. And then, dot, dot, dot.
And here we are. Yeah.
Oh, no, no, it's got to be 3 years later. I want to know what's in between.
Oh, the dot, dot, dot
yeah.
part.
Yeah.
Oh.
Tell me about your night cache.
Yes, I had a night cache at that time. I ended up taking that one down that night. It was going to be coming down soon. I was going to disable it and make room for some more. Actually, it was going to be hunting season. I wanted to get rid of it before hunting season came out. I think it was Myotis hadn't done it yet, and he wanted to go on that. So I said, sure, I'll take you. We'll go on a little hike there at night. And I had been eyeing up Dana all day, not knowing who she was, but trying to get up the courage to talk to her. And I thought, well, this would be a good excuse. I can come up to her and ask her if she wants to go on a night cache with two strange guys. And they accepted, her and her mother. So first time.
Oh, she had a chaperone.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was really funny. Our first get together, my mom wasn't along, but we were, Myotis and Bruce and I and mom were talking. It was toward the very end of the picnic. We were getting ready to leave.
It takes me a while to get my courage up.
Said to Myotis, did you ask them if they wanted to go on the night hike? And, you know, that's when we found out about it, and it was rainy. And I told him, I said, we will meet you back at certain parking lot, and mom and I actually ran over to, I don't remember the name of the sporting goods store, and got a rain jacket for me and went back and met them. He was surprised. He thought we wouldn't show up because of the rain. I'm like, no.
Well, what's the chances of two women showing up on a hike at night with two strangers?
Right.
Hadn't even met before.
Right.
They want to walk out a mile or two into the woods and the rain, no less.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of
I was surprised.
When you think about it. We didn't think about it.
Did they twice?
No, I was like, no, two strange guys. We don't always go for a hike.
Your mom and dad were with you, or just your mom?
Just my mom at that point.
She geocaches.
Yeah, they actually have a name together, Princess and Frog. So we met that night, and my mom, she was kind of funny. When on the way home, she goes, he's going to call you and ask you out. I'm like, no, he's not. What is that about? She's, just wait. The next day, that night, I got home, I had an email from you giving me the cache page, emailing me the link for the cache page because you had archived it. So kind of started emailing each other, and our first date was Agate's Park Duke. Geocaching laid the ground for our whole relationship. You always have something to talk about.
Yeah.
It's cheap. So, it's a great social activity to get to know each other.
How do you eventually get to the point where you decided you want to put your caching names together?
That was many years later. How did we come about doing that?
See, I had something like 40 caches, 40 finds when I met you. And I reached 100 in December of 2002. So that was 60 that we had found together. And pretty much every cache there on that I have found, we have found together, minus about 5 in Ohio when I was with Janae. He came up with Tumble Oak.
Well, I came up with combining the two together, but you have a credit of coming up with those names to start with.
Okay. Oh, about to describe who we are and how we are.
Yeah, I have my own theory about that.
Okay, do you? What's your theory?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah.
It seemed obvious to me that Dana being the get up and go and move everything and bounce around and stuff. That's the tumble part of it.
You got it.
Barry, Barry being the, you know, the sturdy, you know, no
rooted.
Nonsense, you know, grounded. He's the oak.
Exactly. Tumble.
That's very close.
Oh. Yes.
That's very, very close.
Very,
yeah.
That's pretty good. A lot of our background. I've lived in lots of places. When I said born in Kentucky and grew up in New Orleans, I left out.
You skipped a few.
Oh, yeah. Carolina. I lived in Missouri prior to this. I've lived in Illinois.
California.
Florida.
In other words, you bounce around like a tumbleweed.
Oh, yes,
okay.
Absolutely. And my goals and dreams all center around going places and seeing new things and still that whole tumbleweed approach. And which is, he's very good for me because he does keep me grounded, you know, as much as I need to be. So, yeah, that's where it came from him being like the strong, sturdy.
Well, person. You always called me the oak tree.
Oak tree.
I have deep roots, yes. As you would say.
I mean, we've cashed together for 3 years, so might as well at this point just simplify it and bring them together. Ammo box in the woods.
Okay.
Purist. Ammo box in the woods. That's where I started. That's what I want now, still.
Still, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're getting scarcer.
Yeah.
Harder to find.
We'll do, if we're not doing anything on a nice Saturday afternoon, we might go to some of the city parks and, get 10 in an hour. But mostly what we seek out now is things that are going to take us on a nice walk.
Or that, perhaps even an overnight trip.
Yeah, we've done 3 backpacking trips. Centered around finding a cache.
Just like everybody else, geocaching has brought us to so many neat places we never even knew existed before. Pretty places in the state I haven't even been to. Parks, just whole parks hidden somewhere. Where did that come from? I've been here my whole life.
Personally, for me, I won't place a cache just because there's a place to place a cache. If it's something that I want to do, it's going to be someplace that's different, that's off maybe off a bit of the beaten path, like the ones we have out now, like La Barque Trilogy, like La Roche de la Croix, that's different.
In the earlier days, it was fun just to go out and throw out a box somewhere just to have something for people to hunt when there weren't that many caches out. But, we'd like to have someplace where we'd like to bring people that's special, where there's something nice to see.
I won't fill out paperwork.
Yeah. I don't have one out there because I don't want to fill out the paperwork.
Right, I don't. Yeah. And that's the reason we didn't put back up Keebler Cottage.
Oh.
And they expire in a year, too. So
it's kind of like an unfounded fear that you will have hordes of people from the city coming and trampling your wildflowers.
Yes.
And yet, even the best caches, they get a dozen people, and then it just stops.
Right.
And the numbers trickle off.
Hawaii.
Yes. Going back in there. Not to Kauai, but the big island. And we'll get all those caches, too.
Well, there's a few more on that island,
like 65 on the big island.
But we do have more time this time.
We do have more time, yeah.
Because you can do house hunting?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. We're
exploring
the feasibility of that. $400,000 for a 700-something square foot shack. Yeah, but caching in Hawaii was great. We went after a cache the other way to Hanalei.
It was a torturous trip.
That was a torturous trip. Up mud, up to mid-calf.
Well, you got to picture this. This trail is placed on the wettest spot on Earth.
Yes.
On the map. Literally, that's what it says. And it's
true.
Right
there next to Mount
They get
to
like,
Wyoming.
What is it, 360 inches of rain a year?
Some of the ridiculous
And it rains every day, every hour. And there's literally mud up to your knees at times. That's the trail, if you want to call it a trail.
You can't walk upright. You have to literally scooch down and kind of crawl.
It's almost like going through a cave.
It takes you to a mountain, and it goes through the mountain through a cave. And on the other side of the cave is the town Hanalei. And that's why the name of the cache was the other way to Hanalei instead of driving around the island.
It was about 3 hours, I think.
And we finally came to an opening, and we looked, and we still saw that the mountain was still
Was that any closer?
No, not at all. No.
This is crazy.
I don't think you should move to Hawaii because within a month or two, you'll have found all the caches.
I know. What are we doing? We talked about that. I think they call it rock fever. You know, after seeing everything on this rock and what else is there to do. Washington. Washington in Oregon is an interesting
place. That was a very good trip.
And then there was Trollville. We have to tell you about Trollville. Trollville is a good example of why every once in a while a virtual works. There is these houses that look like they're built out of a fairy tale land. They're castles. Big, huge, wooden troll. And the idea behind the caches is you have to get your picture taken in front of this troll in order to claim the find.
The amount of detail that went in there, yes.
Why did they do that?
We don't know.
Nobody
Actually,
knows, yeah.
Go to www, I think it's trollville.com. As a matter of fact, and you can find some information on this.
Was Barry out natural all during that time?
No, you know what? I don't think he went native at all in Washington. He tends to do that closer to home. Hey. Wait a minute. minute. No, as a matter of fact, you did. You did go native in Oregon.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Because you're going to deny it.
Well, let's just from now on, Barry's going to deny it always.
I can tell you. He has a tendency to go out in the woods when nobody's around. He loses his pants. I don't know what to do. And then his shirt goes, and there he is. And he just enjoys it. This very reserved, conservative, soft-spoken, shy man gets out there and goes primal. I don't know what that's about. And there are pictures to prove it.
I don't have much to say about that.
How about we do this rapid-fire question? Because I'm looking at this list, and
I'll give you a couple seconds to answer, and then we'll move on. Do you like to cash alone with a friend or a large group?
With him.
What factors dictate which cash you've been looking for?
Distance, size.
Terrain, chiggers.
Describe the type of caches you like, dislike. Like container, how well hidden, hiding spot.
Big containers, no micros, normally.
Okay. In the woods.
What tools, gadgets, and supplies do you take with you on a hunt?
Flashlight? GPS?
Water? I don't think we take much of anything.
Depends where we're going.
Yeah. How long do you hunt for a cache before you give up?
Depends on where it's at and what kind of cache it is. If
it's
a
minutes.
Micro...
Maybe 5 minutes.
2.5 minutes.
If you don't find it, how often do you go back? Do you ever go back to look again?
A micro, no. If it's a good cache, that would, what we would think is a good cache, we'd go back.
Unless
we'd
it got taken away.
Yeah.
Out of state.
Do you have a signature cache trinket?
No.
Nope.
Any run-ins with authorities during a hunt?
Yes.
Did it result in a positive experience?
No.
Let's not there. Let's go on to that one a little bit more.
We did?
I did, oh. Actually. It was the I-44 rest stop cache. Me and my
dad
were coming back from a float trip, and we stopped to do that cache. And we went in the woods, and this, some official, I don't know who she was, with an orange vest, and a group of other people around her came after us and, what are you doing in there? And so she was hollering and throwing a fit.
Lots of people had run-ins with her or someone who worked there.
Apparently there was some sort of drug something or another going on there. People hiding stuff in the woods. And 44, okay. I guess, is a popular drug route. So
yeah.
I guess she thought we were back there hiding crystal. I don't know what she thought. And I'm trying to explain to her what's going on. She won't even let me finish. She's just too busy chewing me out of one side. Tell the other how I'm not supposed to be there. And I offered to take her to go show her what we were doing, but she didn't want any part of that.
There was no sign that says keep out, is there?
No.
We don't go in the summer. In the dead of the summer, if there's heavy foliage out.
When will you start caching again? I mean, would you be caching now, but then maybe March you stop because the ticks are starting to come out?
Right. As soon as it starts to green up. It's just too high a price to pay for us. We both get the bugs.
I was at the dog park with Zoe in Tucson, and we were walking around a lake, struck up a conversation with a guy and his son. The kid was about 8 years old, and told him that, you know, we'd just moved there and that I'd like to go hiking, blah, blah, blah. And he said, the little kid said, well, have you ever heard of geocaching? And I hadn't. I didn't know what he was talking about. Within 24 hours, I owned a GPS.
Oof.
And not too much later, I had found my first cache.
I know I had seen it on TV. Tech TV, Leo Laporte, I think, had interviewed somebody on it. And I'm sure I knew about it some other ways. I'd heard about it for about a year, but didn't have a GPS. So I finally got a deal on a GPS. And
GPS 3 Plus.
Yeah, you had the 3, and I had the 1 up on you. I had the 3 Plus.
Right. So you can upload maps, and I was stuck with whatever
maps. I could upload a map, maybe 2. It only had 1 meg of memory.
You know what happens if you go on vacation and you leave your GPSs in the back seat of the car when you get on the plane? You just go buy a new one. That's what we did in Arizona.
All two GPSs and the spare batteries.
Yeah, everything that we used, we left in the car when we got on the plane. And we weren't about to not go caching. Yeah. So we just
Where's nearest Walmart?
Don't ever follow him on a shortcut. It's never, ever a shortcut, ever. Even if it is getting there, it's still much more treacherous if you just took the long way.
Did you like that cache, Lost Cabin?
Yeah, I did.
That was a good little walk. We went there. We actually found where the cache was, But it was stolen. It was pilfered. I think you were the last one there to find it.
Well,
before
you may have come when I was there, it had been trashed by an animal, I'm sure, because there were all sorts of twist ties and they had been all moved into pieces.
Right. That happened before up there.
It was a Tupperware container, and I can imagine the animals in there. But I had enough stuff in my backpack to put a new cache out, a whole container and stuff. So I all put it in there. I did that, but that still wasn't good enough because you must have found it afterwards. And
we were there a few months later, and it was we got there right at dark. It was actually right at dark when we got to the cache.
It wasn't
planned that way.
We lost Zoe.
Zoe, yeah, she ran away that day. Yeah, we lost her for a few hours. Well, we just decided we're never going to take her off leash in Illinois again. Because that's twice the time in Illinois.
Yeah, because you're right. She's
okay if you're on a trail with her. She can follow the trail. But if you're bushwhacking, she doesn't know where to go. Her mind wanders.
And I remember you saying, you have a social worker.
Yeah, I'm a social worker now. Yeah, with adolescents, psychiatric problems, behavioral disorders, emotional problems. Going from psychiatric social worker to hopefully emergency department nurse, it's really not going to get that much better. It's still going to be crazy and chaotic. It's just going to be maybe something a little bit different.
Different type of excitement.
Yeah. Most of the kids, they're not in there for that long, so it's a crisis intervention thing.
Oh.
Yeah, but the interviewing part, my first job was, I was a writer. I actually wrote the managing editor of St. Louis Homes and Lifestyles for a while. Did some freelance work for a while, edited medical textbooks, go figure, and now here I am in nursing school, did that for a while. So.
Thanks, guys, for doing the podcast, even though you had no idea
what a podcast is.
Oh, we're doing a podcast?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I just find something for pizza. That's how I lure you in.
That's right. I mean, nobody wins.
Yeah.
You know,
there's nothing to win.
It's never over.
Yeah. When I first started geocaching, I wouldn't tell anybody about it. I would not tell. Nobody heard about geocaching from me in Arizona.
They wouldn't understand.
I wouldn't want to.
No, she wanted to keep it a secret.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't one of these people. Yeah, let's go. You know, introduce it to the world. No.
Right.
Oh yeah. Right.
Keep it this little underground secret society.
It's great the way it is.
Yeah. You're going to have quality, and it's not going to be in the masses. And
this concludes the Slaga podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.